Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Award-winning documentary filmmaker Ken Burns will be at the Arms Library in Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts on February 12th at 7 o'clock to present clips from his new 7-part film, The Roosevelts, An Intimate History. The 14-hour film will air on PBS later this year. The Roosevelts weaves together the stories of Theodore, Franklin, and Eleanor Roosevelt, three members of one of the most prominent and influential families in American politics. He's been making films for more than 30 years since the Academy Award-nominated Brooklyn Bridge in 1981. Ken Burns has gone on to direct and produce some of the most acclaimed historical documentaries ever made, including The Civil War, Baseball, Jazz, The National Parks, America's Best Idea, and The Dust Bowl, among many others. It is a great pleasure to welcome Ken Burns back to the Roundtable. Ken, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe, for having me.
It's always a delight. What brought you to the Roosevelts? It seems, as looking at your body of work, that it was sort of inevitable.
It's been more than inevitable. It's sort of been written into our DNA almost from the beginning of this experiment and trying to, you know, bring history to film and to television. My principal collaborator in those 30-plus years has been a man named Jeffrey C. Ward, who is himself an author of two books about Franklin Roosevelt and is himself a polio victim. So there was going to be only a certain amount of time, and he and I have been discussing it for those 30 years, that we do at least Franklin. But as we talked and as the years went on, we realized how much people don't understand how intertwined a family drama this is. This is an American Downton Abbey. I mean, it raises all the questions about what is the role of government, what can a citizen expect of the government, what is the nature of leadership, how does adversity in childhood and later affect leadership, what are the flaws of these three very complicated people and how those flaws are at war in negotiation with their strengths to ultimately reconcile heroism. All of those things are there, but it's one heck of a dramatic story as well, and so that's what we're telling. Eleanor Roosevelt, which people often forget, is the favorite first cousin, favorite niece of Theodore Roosevelt and the fifth cousin of Franklin. So they were all born with the last name Roosevelt, and the complicated childhoods and the complicated early lives and their intertwining are hugely important. And Franklin Roosevelt modeled a great deal of his trajectory, or tried to model it, on his more famous cousin Theodore's trajectory, and many of the same things and issues that he brought to fore and were debated in Franklin Roosevelt's time were the chief issues that had been brought to fore in the Progressive Era with Theodore, and are indeed things we're talking about now, like health care and the role of government and things like that. So they seem, you can take the qualifier off it. They are the most important family. They have affected more Americans than any other family in American history.
In talking about them personally, you mentioned both the words complicated and drama. There is a soap opera aspect to this family.
You know, there is, and I teasingly kidded the television critics when we all met with them that this was our Downton Abbey, only it had two virtues. One, it's true, and second, it's made in America, not imported from Britain. But I don't want to. Soap opera has one sort of way. This is, every family is complicated. Your family's complicated. My family's complicated.
Right.
What's so amazing about the Roosevelts is you take three, you know, unbelievably bold-faced names, and by understanding some of the things that went on in their lives that made them who they were and how they interacted, betrayals as well as trusted friendships, that you get a better sense of who they are on the national stage. And we don't shirk that. All the wars are there, all the politics is there, all the social stuff is going on. But it's also rooted in this intimate story of where they came from, that you begin to see their familiarity. These are very, very human people. And sometimes the truths that issue out of the film are not just about government, not just about policy, not just about war, not just about society, but about human beings and how we are and how we struggle to get along and how we struggle to overcome difficulties in our own lives and how those difficulties sometimes are the agents of our own transformation in a positive sense. And so, you know, all of a sudden we were realizing we had a story that was firing on all cylinders, that it will appeal to all the people who, you know the basic rudimentary story of Theodore and Franklin and Eleanor, but it's got some background and depth and viewpoints that I think have never been seen before. And in fact, Jeff is the beneficiary, as a scholar, of recently released, discovered letters between Franklin and a distant cousin who was a very close friend of his that essentially rewrite a lot of what we know about Franklin Roosevelt's inner life, most all of it described by Eleanor after his death, and often tinged with her own sense of betrayal about his unfaithfulness to her in the teens when he was Assistant Secretary of the Navy with her own social secretary, a beauty named Lucy Mercer, who ended up being present at his deathbed when Eleanor wasn't. And so there's very interesting backstories. And the president had been arranged to see her through his daughter, and you know, Eleanor Roosevelt had to, A, wake up to the fact that her husband, the leader of the free world in the middle of the greatest cataclysm in human history, the Second World War, had died, B, that with him was his ex-lover, among other people, and then C, this had been arranged by her own daughter. And this is one of maybe 200-like stories in this film.
Mm. In those letters between Franklin Roosevelt and his cousin that Jeff Ward has discovered, how does the narrative change? What do we find out?
Well, we find out somebody, you know, Eleanor, for example, just to give you one example, said he never complained about polio once. You know, she and her famous uncle, Theodore, could outrun their demons, and they spent their lives doing that. And the demons of alcoholism and badness that beset that Oyster Bay branch of the family that Theodore and Eleanor were happily free of only because they kept going their whole lives. Franklin, coming from a little bit saner branch of the Hyde Park Roosevelts, when he was stricken with infantile paralysis, emphasize infantile, at the age of 39, and taking him out of politics for a good time, which was actually beneficial, otherwise he would have been a footnote to history, he can't outrun his demons. And so his letters to his distant cousin Daisy Sukley, you know, reveal all of his moods, and they agreed on a kind of honesty with each other that didn't suggest that they were having an affair, but an extraordinary friendship. And it's in that we flesh out somebody who comes down to history for us, Franklin Roosevelt, as incredibly opaque, the guy with a great grin. George Will says in our film, the best New Deal program was Franklin Roosevelt's smile and the confidence that he exuded, but also a sense of opacity that you didn't quite get to know him. What's, I think, stunning about Daisy's letters to him and his letters to Daisy are you feel like you break that a little bit and you can come to terms with, you know, without a doubt, the greatest president of the 20th century and certainly in the running with Abraham Lincoln for the greatest president of all time.
When you look at the family as a whole, you were mentioning the branches a moment ago, but when you look at the family as a whole, do you see a through line when it comes to a moral compass or a code?
Yeah, I think there is, and that's a very simple equation. They all inherited, and T.R. got it first from his own father, Theodore Roosevelt Sr., a sense of obligation to those less fortunate, a kind of sense that we still debate today, whether that's right or wrong, that we all do well when we all do well. Sounds kind of obvious, sounds e pluribus unum-ish, but we don't always subscribe to that. And these are three people whose moral compass, as sort of distracted as they were at times by, you know, the larger-than-life character, the steam engine in trousers that T.R. was, the timid, insecure Eleanor, who finally could outrun them through tragedy, and Franklin Roosevelt, who rises out of his wheelchair to help us rise out of the Depression. These are great dramatic stories, but I think if we see the underpinning of people who were called, particularly Franklin Roosevelt, was called a traitor to his class, and that meant that here was a man to the manor born who spent a good deal of his life, as did Theodore and certainly Eleanor, to helping other people less fortunate than themselves. And that was both Christian, part of their Christian upbringing, and that's part of it, part of their conservatism, and it's hard to us to look at two progressives, three progressives, and think of them as conservatives, but they essentially were in many other fashions, conservation of landscape, being very wary about budget deficits, though they were run, particularly in the Depression. But coming at it from, I think, a very Christian thing about helping other people. And that's the basis for a lot of the progressive programs of that era of Theodore Roosevelt and certainly of the New Deal.
The last time I spoke to Jeff Ward was at the reopening of the FDR Library and Museum in Hyde Park. And I asked him a question that I was just curious about, because you have FDR, who was very aware of his place and of what was happening. And here was a guy, while he was alive, wanted to make all of his papers available and have all of his papers kept, and was very concerned about that legacy. I assume that is something for you as an historian that you can't help but applaud.
We do indeed. We do know that a good deal of his life was secrecy. You know, the Secret Service would put their hands over cameras if they were filming the very difficult, arduous effort it took for him to not walk, but use crutches or the assistance of other people combined with his braces that locked his legs. You know, he never walked again after he was stricken with polio.
Right.
Unaided. And there, we've done a great, you know, detective work to find the little snippets that show him doing that. And I think it will be a revelation to viewers. You know, Jeff Ward himself said that people would say, you know, when I entered the Oval Office, the president rose to greet me. And he never rose to greet anyone, as Jeff points out in the film, but just his sheer personality did. And part of that personality was understanding that he was doing the people's business and that this ought to be something. It begins with boyhood collections of stamps and naval prints and models and stuffed animals. You know what I mean? And then it grows into what is, you know, a great, the first of the presidential libraries, but also the impulse for the National Archives, and the idea that we're obligated in a democracy to save the business of that democracy so that its citizens can see, you know, what many people have called the sausage making that is democracy. It's important to have a record of it, and we've certainly as filmmakers benefited from all the saved things, and his adoring mother Sarah, you know, probably no mother has ever given her son more love than Sarah Delano Roosevelt gave her son Franklin, and that allowed him to in turn impart to the rest of us a confidence that we could get through the worst economic cataclysm in human history, followed immediately by the worst cataclysm in human history, the Second World War. Not a bad story.
You're going to be presenting clips from the 7-part film. It's 14 hours. And how did you ultimately decide how to break it up?
Well, you know, the film, the 14-hour film, the 7 episodes, sort of fits rather chronologically. The first one covers the 19th century, and then each subsequent one is more or less a decade, except for the last one that goes from the middle of the Second World War to Eleanor's death in 1962. But for the purposes of presentation, it is just a horrible Sophie's choice to come and try to select even an hour of stuff, a little bit more than an hour of stuff to do justice. But it's sort of parachuting into various moments in the series, which I think will reveal in new ways, even in these brief clips, to an audience, the kind of tiger by the tail that we've got and how interesting and compelling a story it is.
Ken Burns will be at the Arms Library in Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts on February 12th at 7 o'clock to present clips from his new work, The Roosevelts, An Intimate History. To reserve tickets, call 413-625-0306, 413-625-0306, or for more information, go to our website, wamc.org/roundtable. And again, The Roosevelts and Intimate History will be broadcast on PBS later this year. Ken Burns, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Joe, so much.
A delight. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.